If you ask like almost anyone how they expect the future of artificial intelligence to be regulated, they usually picture this big movie scene.
Oh, right, yeah, like grand congressional hearings.
Exactly. Flashbulbs popping, presidents signing sweeping executive orders on primetime television, or, maybe tech CEOs making dramatic declarations about the fate of humanity.
Right, there's this collective expectation that the rules are going to be written in bright, bold ink right out in the open.
Yeah. But that completely ignores how the machinery of government actually functions.
It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, the grand philosophical debates about AI saving or destroying us are mostly just noise.
Which brings us to today's deep dive. We are looking at a really fascinating dispatch from Conversational AI Watch in front of us.
And what's fascinating here is that if you look closely at this past week, and today is Sunday, June 28, 2026, by the way, the actual binding governance of frontier models isn't happening on television.
No, not at all. It's happening through, incredibly obscure procedural mechanisms, just tucked into the margins of the calendar.
Exactly. The thesis of this dispatch is eye-opening. This week, the calendar did the writing.
So we're going to look at the mechanics of time and power in frontier AI governance. The dispatch outlines five different clocks that ran in the AI space over the last few days.
But we are going to zero in on three specific clocks, and I think, more importantly, the three champions who understood how to read those calendars to force action while everyone else was distracted.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our first clock takes us out to the Pacific, where a state politician basically passed an AI law by strategically doing absolutely nothing.
It's honestly a masterclass in bureaucratic maneuvering. We're looking at Senator Jarrett Giahokolodi.
Right, he's a state senator from Oahu.
Yeah, and he chairs the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. He also happens to be running for Congress right now in Hawaii's 1st District.
So he and a colleague introduced Senate Bill 3001. On the surface, this is like a highly specific chatbot disclosure bill.
Right. It mandates that if a conversational AI system is talking to a minor in Hawaii, it has to disclose that the user is not talking to a human at least once an hour.
And the enforcement actually has real teeth.
Oh, definitely.
Operators have to report annually to the Department of Health Behavioral Health Administration starting on January 1st, 2028.
But the enforcement runs directly through the Office of Consumer Protection at the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, the DCCA.
And that detail, the DCCA part, that is what makes this so interesting. Giahokolodi engineered this bill to survive a lawsuit from tech lobbying groups like NetChoice before a lawsuit was even filed.
Yeah, he did this by working directly with the Hawaii Attorney General's office on the operative language. He framed a violation explicitly as an unfair or deceptive practice.
Which is a massive distinction,
It's
right?
huge, because when tech lobbyists challenge state AI laws, they typically rely on First Amendment arguments.
Right. They claim the state is compelling speech or restricting expression.
Exactly. But by anchoring SB 3001 in consumer protection statutes, he shifted the entire legal battlefield away from speech and into fraud and false advertising. Courts treat those very differently.
It's like setting a bear trap by hanging a free honey sign over it.
That's actually a great way to put it.
Right. He knew the tech lawyers would blindly rush in with their standard First Amendment arguments, only to realize they're trapped in a consumer protection framework where those arguments suddenly have no leverage.
It completely reduced the legal surface area opponents could attack. So once both chambers passed the hardened text on May 8, the bill went to the desk of Governor Josh Green.
And this is where the specific clock comes into play for our deep dive today.
Right. So under Article 3, Section 16 of the Hawaii Constitution, a governor has exactly 45 days after the legislative session ends to act on bills.
Okay.
And if the governor intends to veto a bill, they are required to give 10 days' notice and place it on a published intent to veto list.
So the governor published that intent to veto list this past Tuesday, June 25. He named four specific bills he plans to strike down.
But SB 3001 was not on the list,
He simply omitted it.
meaning the veto window slammed shut. Because the governor remained silent and left it off that mandatory list, the unsigned bill automatically becomes law on day 45, which falls on July 15th.
Wait, so Giahokolodi understood the political reality here,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. The governor likely didn't want to sign it and anger the tech companies, but he also didn't want to veto a bill protecting minors from deceptive AI and anger the voters.
It's like a procedural judo move. He used the governor's own inertia and silence as the momentum to pass the law.
Yes. The senator just let the governor's political paralysis do the heavy lifting.
Think about how you usually experience politics. You expect a dramatic signature or a fiery veto. Here, the governor just ignores the piece of paper, and on July 15th, Hawaii gets a new AI law.
Plus, Kiahokalole gets to tell voters he successfully regulated AI while Washington is deadlocked. He weaponized silence.
Wow. Okay, so a state senator has the luxury of letting a 45-day clock run out. But that transitions us to a very different scenario.
Yeah, a vastly different one. Because what happens when an individual citizen or a private company is facing an existential threat from the federal government?
Right. They don't have 45 days to wait for bureaucratic silence to magically resolve their problem.
Exactly. They have to go on the offensive.
Which brings us to our second clock. You don't wait for a clock to run out. You go to federal court and you start a brand new one.
Enter Arthur A. Rothrock.
Right. He's a California litigator and the co-founder of a startup called Legion Legal Tech.
And their entire product relies on using Anthropic's frontier models, specifically Fable 5 and Mythos 5. They use them to draft complex legal documents like complaints, motions, discovery.
Our source points out that a task taking a small law firm 8 billable hours now takes Legion Legal Tech 2.5 hours.
It is the core engine of their business model. But on June 12, the federal government stepped in and effectively unplug that engine.
Okay, wait. I need to pause here because I am completely lost on the mechanics of this part.
Check.
I know what an export is. When you talk about export controls, I picture customs agents stopping a cargo ship full of physical microchips or like weapons from leaving a port.
Right, physical goods.
Exactly. How on earth does the Commerce Department restrict an American startup in California from querying an American server in the cloud and legally call that an export?
That is the exact statutory leap that is causing so much friction right now. Secretary Howard Lutnick used a highly obscure administrative lever, specifically 15 CFR section 744.22B.
Okay, so a specific regulation.
Yeah, the CFR is the Code of Federal Regulations, and this specific section falls under the EER, the Export Administration Regulations.
Right.
Historically, you are completely right. These laws governed physical goods or maybe downloading sensitive software code across national borders.
But not just asking an AI a question.
No, but the Commerce Department is aggressively stretching the interpretation of export to include a domestic company just accessing an API. Just sending a digital question to a model and getting an answer back.
Wow. And they use this to send a private letter restricting access to both of those Anthropic models for a list of parties known only as Annex A.
Exactly. And Anthropic complied immediately and disabled access.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Wait, a cabinet secretary can just send a private letter bypassing public notice and comment and immediately tank a startup's payroll. How is that not a complete due process nightmare?
Or Arthur Rothrock certainly thinks it is. When the government uses a private letter to stretch the definition of an export law, they avoid having to publicly justify that massive expansion of power.
So Rothrock did what litigators do.
He sued. On Tuesday, June 23, he filed an Administrative Procedure Act, or APA, challenge in the District of Columbia.
And the APA is the federal statute that literally exists to stop government agencies from ruling by secret decree, right?
Yes. It requires them to publish their rules and explain their logic. So Rothrock is basically demanding the government show its math.
The case is Legion Legal Tech v. United States, case 1.26-CV-02225, and it's sitting before Judge Richard J. Leon.
And by filing this, Rothrock put the federal government on a strict, unavoidable calendar.
A new clock.
Exactly. The government has to answer by July 14th, and the preliminary injunction, the PI hearing, is scheduled for no earlier than the week of July 27th.
To understand the stakes here for the listener, a preliminary injunction is basically a request to a judge to stop the bleeding before the actual trial even happens, right?
Yeah. Rothrock is arguing that if Legion Legal Tech loses access to these mods for even a month, the company dies. The pace of AI advancement is just too blistering to sit on the sidelines.
And his core legal argument echoes a theory first floated by former Commerce Policy Advisor Alistair Phillips Robbins.
Right, which is that there is simply no export here to restrict.
But the plot thickens before they even get to that PI hearing. Because just 3 days after Rothrock filed his lawsuit on Friday, June 26, Secretary Lutnick sent another private letter.
Yeah, this time he sent it to Tom Brown, Anthropic's chief compute officer.
And in this new private letter, Lutnick suddenly cleared the Mythos 5 model for over 100 companies and federal agencies.
But he kept Fable 5 completely dark.
Yeah.
And the list of who was actually cleared in that June 26 letter is still secret.
We have no idea who is on it.
No. We don't know the criteria. We don't know the underlying statutory authority. The secretary is essentially turning regulatory dials in the dark, picking winners and losers in the AI economy behind closed doors.
I can definitely see the government trying to use that partial clearance to make the lawsuit go away. Like, they could just say, look, we gave some access back. The emergency is over.
Oh, they probably will. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, Rothrock explicitly points out in his filing that this partial private clearance doesn't make the lawsuit moot. It actually makes it vastly more important. Because if the Commerce Department can arbitrarily shut down Anthropic today without public justification, they can do it to OpenAI or Google tomorrow.
So Lutnick's private clearances make the upcoming PI hearing the week of July 27 the only place where the Commerce Department's authority will be tested on the public record.
Exactly. It's brilliant. Rothrock took a shadowy private regulatory regime that operates on secret annexes and dragged it into a federal courtroom.
Where every single justification has to be written down, entered into evidence, and defended under oath.
Which brings us to our third and final clock. We saw that a federal judge can force the Commerce Department onto a strict timeline. But what about the people elected to actually oversee these cabinet agencies?
Right. Can Congress force the bureaucracy to explain itself?
And that is where we transition from a legal clock to a political clock. Because a federal judge can compel an agency under penalty of law.
But a member of Congress is mostly operating with the power of public pressure and oversight requests.
Right. So let's look at our third champion. Representative Sam Liccardo of California's 16th District.
He's a freshman congressman.
He is. But before arriving in Washington, he spent two terms as the mayor of San Jose. He managed a city of over 1 million people in the heart of Silicon Valley.
So he knows how to wield executive power.
Exactly. And on June 18th, Representative Liccardo led a bipartisan letter directly to Secretary Lutnick.
He secured three crucial co-signers, right? Jay Obernolte, Ted Lieu, and Scott Franklin.
Yes. Two Democrats, two Republicans. And the composition of those signatures is highly strategic.
How so?
Well, it signals to the Commerce Department that this isn't just partisan grandstanding for cable news. This is a substantive, unified oversight demand coming directly from members who sit on the subcommittees with actual jurisdiction over technology and commerce.
And the letter was incredibly pointed. I mean, they didn't just ask general policy questions. They demanded to know the exact statutory basis for those June 12 model restrictions.
Right. They asked how the restrictions fit under the Export Control Reform Act, known as ETRA.
And they grilled the secretary on how the rules function under ER Section 744.22B. They even asked whether the National Security Council was consulted prior to the restrictions.
Yeah, and pressed for details on specific jailbreak risks. But most importantly, Liccardo set a hard reply deadline.
Right. He gave the Commerce Department until Friday, June 26, to provide answers.
The exact same Friday that Secretary Lutnick found the time to send his second private letter to Tom Brown at Anthropic, partially lifting the ban on Mythos 5.
Oh, wow. So Friday, June 26 arrives, the deadline for Congress expires, and the Commerce Department offers absolute silence.
Nothing. No public answer, no extension request.
Yet on that exact day, they are privately communicating with a regulated company. So what does this all mean? Liccardo used to be a mayor. He signed orders and the lights came on. Now he writes a letter and gets ignored. If a congressional letter has no legal compulsion, why does this expired June 26 deadline even matter?
This raises an important question about transparency. It matters intensely because it establishes a public record of evasion.
Ah, I see.
When an executive agency ignores a bipartisan, highly specific oversight request from Congress, but communicates privately with a massive tech company on the exact same day, they are broadcasting their priorities.
They are showing future courts, international trade partners, and the American public that they prefer backroom deals to public accountability.
Right. They are saying the quiet part out loud.
Yeah.
We don't think we need to explain our legal rationale to anyone.
And the detailed legal justification that Liccardo demanded regarding ECRA and the ERR, that's the exact foundation that Judge Richard J. Leon is going to be looking for, right?
Exactly. In the District of Columbia during Rothrock's PI hearing, by letting that June 26 deadline expire without putting their legal rationale on the public record, the Commerce Department's silence becomes the story itself.
Wow. So Liccardo may not have forced a written answer, but he successfully documented the agency's refusal to provide one.
He weaponized the political clock.
Okay, let's bring all these threads together for you, the listener. If you are listening to this deep dive, trying to understand how this technology is actually going to be governed, you have to look at the three clocks that ran this week.
Right. First, we saw Senator Jarrett Keohokulole in Hawaii leverage the clock of gubernatorial silence.
Yeah, by understanding the mechanics of Article 3, Section 16, he knew that a lack of action by July 15 would automatically forge a new consumer protection law.
He won by simply letting the sand run out of the hourglass.
Then we had Arthur Rothrock, the litigator in Silicon Valley. He couldn't afford to wait on the government.
Right. He used an APA court filing to start a new clock, demanding that the federal government explain its authority over domestic API access in open court by the week of July 27.
And finally, we saw Representative Sam Liccardo use a public political deadline of June 26.
And even though his oversight letter was ignored, the expiration of that deadline brilliantly exposed the Commerce Department's preference for hidden private letters over statutory transparency.
Which is exactly why you should care about these procedural mechanics. The rules governing the AI systems you're going to use at work tomorrow aren't being debated in grand philosophical forums.
No, they are being written right now in private letters, hidden Annex A lists, and through obscure procedural deadlines.
If you only read the press releases, you are completely blind to how power is actually being wielded. You really have to watch the calendar.
Because a system reliant on private grievances and expired deadlines is inherently fragile. It creates a regulatory environment where the only people shaping the law are those with the resources to navigate the bureaucracy.
Which leaves us with a rather chilling final thought to mull over. We've seen today that the current regime of frontier AI export control relies almost entirely on private letters.
Yeah.
And the only way it gets challenged on the public record is if a single financially motivated customer like Arthur Rothrock has the legal expertise and the wherewithal to pay a filing fee and drag the government into court.
That's a huge burden.
It is. So here's the question you have to ask yourself. What happens when a clock runs out on a model that genuinely poses a severe existential national security threat, but no one with legal standing knows enough to file the paperwork?
Right. Who stops the clock then?
We started today talking about how quiet AI governance is, but sometimes a ticking clock is the loudest sound in the room. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep your eyes on the calendar.